Hello, my name's Sylvester McCoy, Doctor Who number 7. You are listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. Yes, that's what. There's something wrong with the speaker. Hello.
Hi.
I'm Metal Mattson from Super Geeky Playdate, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network. Just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. Join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Whittaker and beyond. Your GPR hosts are Jay Witten.
Safety measures are for chumps who don't know what they're doing.
Keir Hansen.
Oh, hold on. I saw it on my mixer. I turned up the suck. Hold on.
And Haley Malley.
I feel like I might need to carb up for next week's episode.
Oh, and
spoilers.
We do discuss recent news, episodes that have already aired in their home territories, and the occasional interesting rumor. But don't worry, if we look too far into the future, we'll give you a fair warning.
Welcome to episode 293 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we tried to leave the studio multiple times, but someone kept trying to sneak some after-dinner mints out in their jacket pocket, and security kept tossing back. I am your host, Haley.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Keir. This week, we watch what must have been a regional theater production of Professor Sorensen and Mr. Arg as the Fourth Doctor and Sarah Jane deal with the duality of theoretical physics. So matter and antimatter are doing a bit of a dangerous dance in Planet of Evil.
No, you said it wrong. It's evil.
Evil.
I would have if there were more genuine villainous danger.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was like, you call it Planet of Evil. I expect a lot more evilness and also maybe the planet to be evil ones.
It's really just a matter of universe saying, hey, give me my antimatter back. You're not allowed to leave with that. You haven't paid for it.
So, yeah.
Okay, so let's go around the horn here and see what our reactions were. Haley, first watch for you. I'm sensing a little trepidation.
I've seen much better takes on Jekyll and Hyde.
Okay.
And I'm including in a particularly bad Buffy episode.
All right. No, I know exactly the episode you're referring to. So, okay. Jay, was this a first watch for you?
It was. Unfortunately, I wish I could have kept that record going. But
okay. All right. Well, not a completionist. That's fair. All right. So this is not exactly a gem of a story. It's not. I don't consider it bad, really. It's just not, it's not of the caliber that I would have come to expect based on some of the stuff that we were given in season 12, it's, mm-hmm. And even the way they start off season 13, you get Terror of the Zygons, which is just a great, fun, engaging story. And then you get this, which is the only way I can summarize it. It is a good idea, poorly executed. The idea of having, as we mentioned, kind of a theoretical physics thing here, we're dealing with some relatively legitimate scientific theory here with, matter and antimatter here. It's kind of crude, mm-hmm. but it's interesting and engaging enough for viewers. And the idea of Sorensen considering these antimatter crystals that he's finding having limitless potential energy, even though it's rather kind of explodey, is...
Minor side effect.
Yeah, but I mean, you can roll with it for the sake of the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The idea of it actually causing a molecular breakdown and causing him to become some kind of an anti-beast, or I'm sorry, the anti-man.
Yeah.
But what about at least our TARDIS team? I mean, what about the Doctor and Sarah themselves? Sarah being the only single woman in this entire story.
Right, because women don't make it in the future.
Yeah. No. Yeah. You hit the 300th century, and that's it.
We can get by without you guys. No, I thought that, okay, so first thought, Liz Sladen was absolutely gorgeous in this one. Absolutely adorable. As far as, and right off of the bat, you get you know, Sarah Jane, like, well, why don't you do this? I'll run back to the TARDIS. I know the piece that you need. Like, just, you know, really independent, taking charge, kind of. Like, I love that aspect of her. I wish that we had seen more of it through the rest of the story.
Yeah,
I should have done with 80% fewer guys with guns running around.
Yeah. And it's one of the things that I keep coming back to in this one. And it's what I will say is one of the saving graces of this particular is that there is such a warmth developing between Forth and Sarah Jane in this. Well, you see it developing all along, but it really, at this point, you get the total package. They're joking with one another. There's this warm humor. There's a definite trust factor between them. There's a sharing of intellect. You know, she's the one that comes up with the idea of the fact that the magnetic locks on the windows won't be as functional because there's low power on the base and what. You know, he goes off. Doctor goes off to explore something, and she calls after him, and he turns around and says, "I know, I'll take care." You know, they've already got this great rapport. They finish each other's sandwiches.
Yeah.
You know? So, but that I will say is probably one of the most redeeming things of this particular. I have others, but speaking of Sarah Jane in particular, yeah. And Jay, you're absolutely right. She's firing on all pistons in this one.
Mm-hmm.
But she has to, because she's doing all the heavy lifting for the fact that she is the only female character in the entire roster. And this is actually a trend that they fall into a bit, sadly enough, that it takes them a little while to climb back out of. So, now, what about our supporting crew, the rest of this, well, I should say of the two Zeta Minor expeditions, both the original scientific expedition and the military force that comes to collect them. How do we feel about all of our supporting cast?
Don't care about them at all.
I mean, honestly, the only reason why I remember even, I didn't even remember Vyshinsky's name until like I actually saw it written in the notes. I only remember Salamar and Sorensen because they said it like every fifth word.
That's true.
Beyond that, it was just kind of like, you know, they really didn't, I don't know. They just fell flat.
Well, let me look at these two individually here. Speaking of, you know, as far as the names that we hear most often, Sorensen, obviously, you keep hearing him referred to all the time because they're constantly yelling about where is he? How many of them is he? So, but for Salamar, did anyone else pick up on the fact that he looks remarkably like James Marsters?
Yes.
Could have been his dad.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing. You know, the cheekbones and everything.
When they go back to this episode in the next season of Doctor Who, you know, they revisit this time period and this little base going on. They can have James Marsters play part.
Yep.
When they're getting Captain their John all along.
Yeah. But I gotta say, he was as far as the way that they were painting him, or at least the way that they were setting up his character, be just the quintessential, you know, I'm just a military company man. You know, I got my orders, we're carrying out our orders, we're doing, you know, what have you. As far as what Lewis Marks was writing into this, it kind of felt like he had something stuck in his craw for these iconic military figures. And he really wanted to just show how overbearing and ridiculous their logic could be, especially when under duress. You know, because right, see some of the lines that he came with, you know, when he tells them point blank that hostile alien forces, that their policy, their orders are to seek out and liquidate what they perceive to be hostile alien force. So it seems like, okay, so this Space Force, I'm sorry, I'm going to call it Space Force. Their policy is to go out and pick fights around the galaxy.
Yeah. How else is everyone going to know that you're the best and baddest out there?
Yeah, exactly. Well, not with those outfits. You're wearing pool noodles. So.
You're like the Space Force in Futurama.
That is Zap Brannigan's outfit. That is totally Zap Brannigan. Oh, my God.
We just need the short shorts. That's all.
Holy. They just needed their little...
They needed a kip.
Yeah, well, and their little skirts, their little kilts to end just below the package.
Made of velour.
Look at the way it flows. I'm going to get stuck in Zap Brannigan when I can't talk about it. I will say, you know, as far as the Sorensen, one of the things that I noted, I keep picking up on it more and more. I've probably watched the story times total, counting this, was that Sorensen is more interesting, or at least more compelling, when he's just a professor, just a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he has that passionate explanation, when he's trying to explain to the lunkhead Dehan, the big dude who science bad, me carry heavy stuff and shoot guns, pew pew. You know, Dehan. when he's explaining to him what the significance of the crystals are, and he's getting really passionate about it. There's enough energy in these canisters to fuel the planet Earth for 300 years or whatever. That I get. I could have done with that the whole time. But as soon as he starts dealing with I'm feeling something burning in my belly, and all of that acting, that's where I lost.
That's where it falls apart, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say the one thing that I did enjoy about this story was that from the get-go, you seriously, like, I really thought when we first met them that Salamar was going to be the you know, the good guy, the kind of, you know, he's like, look, I'm in charge of stuff. And Vyshynski was actually going to be it's like, oh, you don't know anything, you young whippersnapper, kind of, like, he was going to, you know, be the person that fought him. And then, you know, it really, I did not... Even though, like, Vyshynski obviously proved himself really quickly that, like, he's actually level-headed and can think this through, I really didn't catch on that Salamar was going to be the true villain until the end.
Well, maybe not the villain, I get the victim?
I don't know. I call him the villain because he was, like, actively trying to find the doctor at fault. You know, it wasn't... I mean, I know we haven't reached that quote yet, but it's, you know, the fourth doctor quote of the truly powerful and the truly stupid have one thing in common. They alter the facts to fit their ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
And that,
so
I mean,
you get that line. Well, there's actually... that is one of a number of statements that I think are really our writer's stab at military nationalism to a certain degree, or at least the power hungry in whatever organizational form they take. So it does have that bit of a statement. But yeah, I would imagine, though, at this one, Salamar was consistent throughout as just being the ass.
Mm-hmm.
That's just his job. He is just going to be the hard-nosed, hard-line jerk, unwavering throughout.
Right.
When it comes to Vyshynski, I kept seeing signs from him that, because he kept challenging Salamar directly throughout, in increasing degrees of, all right, you're clearly not in control of the rudder here. So he pulled rank by the time you get to the third and fourth episode to just say, I can't let you do this, which is why they end up getting into a lot of the arguments and the struggles they do. I guess that kind of just leaves Sorensen to be the fall guy as being, but you're right. Him attempting to hide the smuggled antimatter out the entire time just shows that, granted, like most villains, he's doing it for what he perceives to be the right means, but I don't think he really had any sort of evil intent. If he were truly made cognizant of the risks of what he was doing, or maybe once he actually, yeah, I guess you see signs of it, once he becomes aware of the fact that he's causing this sort of danger, the remorse is there, which is why he gets the redemption.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'd run with. Because at that point, the rest you've got are just all of our supporting guys who are being slowly, over the course of the story, replaced by the one prop desiccated corpse that they have.
But you can always tell which one it's supposed to be, apparently.
Yes. Well, you know, when they put him into Han's outfit, he's a big dude. You know, he's a big barrel-chested kind of Fred Flintstone-looking dude. And his uniform is just a sack around this desiccated body.
Right.
Credit, by the way, speaking of product placement, Farah's original Harrogate toffee, their tins are like the confectionery equivalent of a Faraday cage, because those things can house antimatter better than any other thing I've ever seen in the place.
Right?
I gotta get me one of those. That'd be a great prop. I wonder if anybody's done fabricated props with the tin add-ons.
I'm sure you can find some somewhere.
Yeah, just I definitely want one of those. If anybody's ever gonna do a proper fourth where, you know, they say, empty your pockets, and you gotta start dragging all this stuff out, the yo-yo, obviously, sure, you gotta have that in, and a couple of other things. You better have a toffee tin.
Go check Rubber Toe. If it's not there, I can guarantee they'll bang one out real quick.
Banged tin? Is that a joke?
No.
Oh, speaking of supporting guys from Space Force. Space Force! Rieg, who was the little scrawny dude on the command deck, who bites it in the third episode. If you ever find yourself watching the story, they didn't even give him a line until halfway through the third story. And then they kill him off real quick because he is annoying as hell. I was out of all the characters, or all the supporting cast who got freeze-dried, he was the one I wanted to see bite it first. Should have just put a red... Although if they made those uniforms red, they would have looked like Zap Brand.
Yeah, it would have been indistinguishable. I loved how when they first found the doctor with the one guy that was dead, And I think it was Salamar came in like, holy crap, it's that guy. I can't remember his name. Mm. And the doctor's response is, he's dead. Like, really? I hadn't put that one together. Like,
what was your clue?
I was like, you know, I'm pretty sure the doctor's smarter than this.
There was. I will say, again, to the writing credit, to the directing credit as well, because I think to a certain degree, the way that they chose to stage and arrange this said something really positive for David Malone as well, as far as his eye, was that all the situations where the blame kept getting pinned on the doctor and Sarah because they were just in the wrong place at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
That seemed to play pretty well. They were always doing something just a moment before if you really thought about it from an outsider's perspective, yeah, they look like the most likely suspect
mm-hmm.
in every single situation. They're always right there next to the body or right there when the explosion happened. Or all the trouble shows up because the damn Scooby kids get involved, you know?
I know. It's like every time it happened, I kept waiting for Professor McGonagall to step around the corner and be like, why is it always you?
Yeah. But I don't know. So, all right. So let's figure out here. I mean, as far as, all right. So maybe I can guess where you're headed with recommendability. But what about rewatch? I'll give you the both. Haley, what would you do with this one?
It seems like one of the most skippable episodes we've seen in a good long while.
Mm.
I can't imagine we're coming back to this planet and these people anytime again in the future. It doesn't seem like it really introduces anything with the Doctor or Sarah that we haven't seen in other stories that are better than this. So I think you can skip safely. Okay.
And then you probably wouldn't want to recommend those again with our usual blanket statement, unless you're a completionist.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a completionist, then you don't need to listen to this part of the podcast. But
or if you really like to see power-hungry military puppet heads get their comeuppance. Enjoy this one too. Jay, what would you say on this one?
Rewatchability, I can't see myself sitting down to watch this. Even if it's just random Saturday afternoon and I'm flipping through channels and come across it, honestly, I'm likely to keep going. I don't see myself revisiting this one. Recommendability, we kind of touched on this early, is that there's the seed of a good story here. The bit with antimatter and the things that it could have been handled correctly. It could have been this fantastic sci-fi story. If you're, you know, working on fan fiction or you're running a Doctor Who RPG or something, this could be a veritable goldmine of ideas to plumb.
Hmm.
You know, go through it and see, like, well, you know, it can do this or it can do that, and it's got the gem of a good story, or the kernel of a good story in there.
Well, let me ask. This is actually something we don't do often, but because when we come across a story that we're particularly struggling with staying positive, one thing that I've never asked you to is if you could go in and you could make one sort of a steering correction, either from the story or from the editing or from the casting or whatever it is that kind of made you feel like it missed the mark somewhere. What would be one thing? I'm not saying it's the definitive. It's not the golden spike. But what would be the one thing that you might change to that you think would have a pretty noticeable improvement on the story as is? And Jay, since you were just kind of you kind of poked me in the brain on this, what would you do as
honestly, I would have made the antimatter more of a plot point. I would have made that the crux of the matter and not a how do we get to turn somebody into a giant monster part. Like that actually would have been the main plot, was the antimatter, the things it does, the things that the way they have to use it to get out of the situation. I feel like that's where the story really could have shown, is if they had played more into the sci-fi element of it instead of just, we need a monster, how do we get a monster, give them magic rocks.
Okay. Haley, what would you do?
I think we need a sympathetic character in with our, you know, weekly cast. Somebody that we actually care, you know, when they're in danger, if the doctor's not going to be able to save all these. I really didn't care if the doctor walked away with nothing but mummies behind him.
That's true. They could have easily turned around, gotten back on the TARDIS and left, and I'd have been like, oh, good job there.
And Sarah tried. She's like, why don't we just leave?
You
know it's bad when the companion says.
Let's just leave these guys. Come on, we got London to get to.
We've clearly done all we can
do. Got a hair appointment.
These schmucks are beyond help.
Mm-hmm.
Did this seem like more of an episode of original series Star Trek than Doctor Who, you guys?
It did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think they were trying to do things differentiate from that, because, you know, at this point you're starting to run up against a lot of series to series comparisons between the two franchises. And I don't. Granted, I mean, the original series at this point only ran how many years? They were no
Three.
Longer. Yeah, so they weren't really spinning
it'd
been up
over
against
for a while.
It. But there were decisions made there and on shows like Blake 7, some of the others that the BBC were doing, that they needed to try to come up with distinguishing points to say, all right, every time we do these awful adventures, we're going to have to come up with something that's stirring it up a little bit, or we're just playing with the same box. So we're either going to change some of the logistics of the way that we travel around on the planet's surface to make it really look like we're in locations. We're going to go very realistic with the jungle sequence. You know, how often through the first episode do we see them constantly, every time the Doctor and Sarah Jane are communicating with one another, the bits of business that they're doing all happen to do with pulling vines out of their hair because they keep crawling through all this underbrush. So, yeah, I can see a lot of these kinds of aspects that between that and however they decided to do the representation of the anti-beasts, you know, with the sort of the neon line effect, I'll have black lights on, you know, a screen overlay. But that didn't quite work for me. So if you're going to keep them at all, and maybe they only made sense for the whole sequence with falling down the pit and confronting the energy at the pit center, the 1.5 falling down the whole sequence, maybe that just needed to be kind of jiggered. And then you wouldn't have to have the Sorensen spinoff beasts running around. It could really just be a matter of the actual planet is evil because it is some sort of a dimensional gateway. I hate you. It's not alternate. It's alternate universe. But a universal gateway that's allowing this cross between matter and antimatter. Then again, I mean, Jay, when you're talking about making the antimatter aspect a little formidable or being the real console story, we have the advantage of looking at it with another 30-40 years of knowledge about theoretical physics.
Right, but I mean, even with the knowledge that you had at the time, it's magic rocks. You could have done something more interesting than, you know, turn somebody into a monster. Like, you know, I mean, this is the time that, I mean, what was Douglas Adams, you know, going nuts with stuff like this? Mm. You know, you could have done countless other things that would have been far more interesting than revisiting Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
For story writing season to come. Okay. Well, I think we have a few positives for the people that do decide to spin through. I mean, Twitch went through about a week and a half ago. There's plenty of material. They're into the fifth. But there are obviously some individual performances. Liz Sladen, fantastic. And Doctor's interesting. A lot of his behavior is very quizzical. You know, a lot of these pensive looks and sort of just sitting back quietly and watching the folly of it all or getting really angry at our Space Force for their decision. Yeah, I think you start to see a lot of his lack of patience for this character archetype, which gets... But yeah, I don't want to dare try to get X out of 5 or X out of ticking, but...
Yeah, no.
But again, yeah, I'm glad I got to see it one more time because I'm glad I got the opportunity to be able to talk it through with two of you, especially because it was your first viewing on it. I just wanted to see whether some of my thoughts valid
I think if you're watching, like, a bunch of episodes, like you would be if you're watching the Twitch stream or whatever, and, you know, it's on while you're doing some other stuff, like, there's nothing particularly bad about this episode. There's just also nothing particularly great about it either. Yeah. Like, it's one of those that you're going to, like... think back on it and be like, wait, what happened in that episode? I don't really remember.
Yeah. Jay, I think you hit the nail on the head. If you were treating this like some sort of a fanfic, or if you were, say you were writing the novelization of this and you knew you had to expand on the story a bit or venture into some inner monologue that we weren't privy to on the script, you might be able to adjust some things or make it really feel more formidable and impactful.
Or just turn it into a real crossover fanfic with Star Trek.
There you go. Seriously. Yeah.
Yeah.
The antimatter is part of the Enterprise. Holy crap!
It's in the fracking ship!
With BSG and Buffy and the Scoobies all running around. Perfect. Oh, all right. Oh, okay. So one little bonus thing that I just want to let people know. I know it's kind of short notice and all, but we do have a pretty good contingency of regional Whovians around what we here refer to as our tri-state. That's Connecticut, New York, Massachusetts. I know everybody's got their own, but whatever. This is ours. We had it first, I think. Kineticon, which happens in our glorious capital state of Hartford, it's about yay big, is happening this coming weekend. There is always a considerable Whovian contingency because you've got good representation from the Whovian Club, who have great overlap with our New York Whovian friends. Many of them are from the Long Island, and the Boston Hoovian Club, which had great contingent, a lot of great folks, a lot of cosplayers, and people that do a lot of fan video and stuff like that. So always well attended. And but we will have, I will be there through the weekend. Have to be for work for the Hoovian Running Club, but I've got a couple panels on the weekend on Saturday for those folks that will be in attendance. So check your guides for discussions about diversity in Doctor Who and having Doctor Who in the family, meaning not cast, who family member. You know, making sure your family appreciates Doctor Who as best you can. Or what do you do if your family doesn't? You know, if you've got a significant other or a kid or a parent that you just can't reach, you've tried to introduce them to the show and it just doesn't click for them, can you ever speak to them again? Yeah, short answer. But we'll deal with how to handle the aftermath. So hoping to see a lot of folks there. So please seek us out. Yep. So anyone for some news?
News.
Just coming off of the weekend, we should definitely just repeat that we got to celebrate a pretty fascinating figure, fascinating number, in what would have been Jon Pertwee's, which means, can't imagine, next year we get to celebrate Pertwee's the centennial.
I really hope that his son dresses up as dad again.
Oh my God, that's exactly what I was thinking of. not just dress up. I want a webisode.
Oh yeah. God, a crossover story with Sean Pertwee playing his dad with Jodie Whittaker. Holy crap.
Okay.
All right, we got to wrap this up so we can write the BBC.
Exactly. Well, because that, between that and the, we didn't include it in the news sequence for this week, but I'm sure a lot of people did catch the fact, and I'm sure the two of you caught, that they were talking to Carol Ann Ford, another gathering, and asking her opinions of, as everybody does, they're always asking about their, of our 13th Doctor to be soon arriving. And she's really hoping, still holding out hope, that she is asked to come back so that she can say hello to her grandmother. Can you imagine? Just so much potential. So much potential. Anyway, a very happy 90th memory of Jon Pertwee. And we'll keep bothering your son because we know that the outfits. So.
Exactly.
Speaking of appearances, Haley, are you going to get to Dragon Con this year?
No, not this year.
Okay, all right.
Sorry.
All right.
Unless somebody wants to send me like free tickets and free plane ticket stuff. Yeah. I accept bribes.
Yeah. I think this would be the time to remind everyone about our Patreon.
I do have a big birthday coming up in September, dear listener.
How funny how that works out. We will have some GPR representation there, but they will just be folks who are good supporters of the show that will be talking on our behalf. But they are going to get a chance to wait in line and wait, along with probably a good 5,000-6,000 other people to try and pack into the main hall for Saturday and Sunday, which will be the 2 days of that convention weekend where both Peter Capaldi and Pearl Mackey have been announced to appear. So Dragon Con has always been a fantastic fan run, still considered a fan run convention, even though it is massive. But it always treats a talent a really good time. So if they can get a word in edgewise around John Barrowman, they'll be just fine.
Good luck.
Yeah. He is literally becoming a caricature of himself.
Oh, yes. Very much so.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
And so, he wouldn't have it any other way.
Our last little bit of news here. Jay, you and I were talking this one through online a couple of days ago. Can you give us a little bit of a synopsis of what strange little piece of news came to us through the back channel?
Yeah. So the way that this was discovered is kind of interesting, where I believe it's the director is... Mm-hmm. The CV actually mentions the Doctor Who Christmas special for 2018. So yeah. Apparently we're getting a Christmas special this year.
Yeah. Yay. I don't, I give a lot of thanks to Stephen Shapansky from over at Radio Friscaro, who contacted Wayne to verify, because Wayne has appeared at some of the more recent convention and RFS has had the opportunity to interview him. So Stephen still had the point of contact, reached out and said, yeah, notice this. Would you mind speaking to this regard? And you know, and so it has been confirmed. It was his agency, actually. Mm-hmm. Wayne's agency had updated his online CV, you know, as you do. They don't normally, I guess, have to be concerned about the announcement or lack of announcement about the particular project. Mm-hmm. So the way it's phrased, it just says Christmas episode, Doctor Who series, BBC. Well, yeah. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But no one had told us before that they were going to do this. So... And it's clearly it wasn't counted into all of the episodes that we have had confirmed for which directors are going to be taking the helm for which of the story for this year. So, hooray! It's happening.
And this, I mean, just in case you ever found yourself doubting the validity of digging into the minutiae of Doctor Who, this is a perfect example of why it matters.
Precisely. Now, it isn't Rachel Talalay.
No.
Ooh.
So we're going to have to wrap our heads around this. But I don't know. The other day I had the thought of, what would happen if Alicia Stern from over at the Doctor Who puppet asked Rachel to direct one of her stop motion puppet episodes? Would that not be the most incredible thing ever?
And I seriously think that Rachel would go for it too.
She probably would. All right, I'm going to reach out to the two of them tonight and see what their thoughts are. Because I think Alicia would probably lose her mind and Rachel would just kind of giggle quietly to herself before saying, yeah, of course I'll do it. so we get their schedules to jive.
And then we get Jodie Whittaker and Sean Pertwee involved. Yep. And it works great.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you know, what else has she got to work on?
Yeah, exactly.
The fan base deserves this. This is something we... But yeah, so there you go.
We've been so good for the last year.
Exactly. We're being extremely... You got to give us credit. We're being patient. Mm-hmm. Well, except for those spoiler jerks. But the BBC and the lawyers are going to shut that guy down.
Thank God, yeah. I love that this is actually turning into a legal thing.
Yes, yes.
All right, well, this has been episode 293 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is not actually Jay. I'm the anti-Jay. This whole podcast is going to blow up now.
And this is Kira saying, Salamar was the perfect example of strong leadership. All right? Strong, very stable, genius leadership.
And this is Haley saying, you and I are scientists, Professor. We buy our privilege to experiment at the cost of total responsibility.
We'll see you guys next week.
We'll see.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio. Or on Facebook at facebook.com/Gallifrey Public Radio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to gunnageek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.gunnageek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.